Welcome to When They Popped. Let's rewind to a simpler time together and dive deep into the music, movement, and mania behind our favorite Y2K celebrities and trends. Hosted by Kelsey and Mary, it's time for another episode of When They Popped.
Hello, and welcome to When They Popped. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Mary.
Mary, it's been a marathon. We've talked so much this week.
It's been an episode heavy week, that's for sure. But
Mary has been pumping out the content. She hasn't slept. She hasn't ate. She's only been reading and podcasting.
And she definitely has been eating, so don't worry. But yes, well, you were a great co-host with me, Kels, and it was really just a passion project, you know, to dive into Britney's book and kind of confirm what we already all knew. So
Mary, can I just say, when I was listening back to the episode, like after it already published, because it was uncut, unedited, yeah. Like Mary literally just hit published as soon as we were done talking, if you haven't listened yet.
We never do that.
We have to self-edit. We are perfectionists. And everyone's probably like, what do you mean? Like,
it's terrible.
<that's> embarrassing. I was listening back and literally all I say is like, wow, that's powerful. Because I avoided all the spoilers and it took me, honestly, like until today, I think, to process everything that you told me in that episode and like how awful, just the sheer magnitude of how horrific it was for Britney back then. Yeah. So like listening to my reaction, like in the moment, I'm like, wow, that's such a subdued response. And now I'm like on fire.
I know.
Took a day to kick in.
Oh my God. I'm extra triggered now about the part that she could only eat chicken and canned vegetables for a year.
Canned vegetables. Like, she has a Whole Foods budget.
And she had to like beg a butler for like a hot dog. It sounds so small, but it's just like, I take so much joy in what I eat. And like, it just makes me so sad. I know that's like small compared to like, I don't know, the IUD and the imprisonment, but like.
But it is. They were controlling everything that she put in her body. That's insane. So if you guys haven't listened, Mary did an incredible two-part, as we mentioned, unedited, like truly just an
most
thorough recap. And if you don't want to read the book, if you feel like you're not up for it, or you just like don't have the time to do it, this recap does such an incredible job covering all of like the major points. So thank you again, Mary, for doing that. You are doing the Lord's work.
It was amazing. And I'm getting excited because I'm going to see Kelsey in Boston. And like, what are we at? Like 2 weeks, three weeks now? I mean, I went to 3 Nick Carter shows last weekend. Was it 3? Like, I don't know. I dropped my phone under the stage. Like, it was a whole shit show of a weekend. But if you have any interest in Nick Carter, the Backstreet Boys 80s music, I would highly recommend hopping on one of his East Coast dates. It was just so much fun. And there's just so many great girls there. And it's like a nice little community. And so if you're looking for that, come find us in Boston.
Yeah, if anyone's going, please DM us at When They Popped Pod. We'd love to meet you guys and maybe give you a t-shirt or a friendship bracelet.
Or a t-shirt. Is there merch around the corner, Kels?
Oh, I think there is, Mary. Okay, a couple weeks ago, we did a poll on our Instagram asking you guys to pick your favorite merch designs. And we're really happy to say that they'll be launching very soon. So keep an eye on When They Popped Pod on Instagram. We will be launching soon.
I will say we have a pretty damn cool logo. So thanks for supporting us in our little passion project. But happy Halloween-y, Kels.
Oh my God, spooky season. So we have to talk about spooky movies. We're like extra DeLulu, but extra delightful this week because of all of the potting and reading and speed reading. So this episode is going to be focused on all of our favorite Halloween movies that really get us in the mood to be scared. Are you a scary movie fan, Mary? I don't think I know this about you.
And by all our favorite, you mean 2, right?
I was going to get there, but yes. The creme de la creme.
Yes, I am. Like, I'm not when Brad's not home, but I am in like a well-lit living room when I'm not alone. Does that make sense?
No, I totally get it. You need like a security blanket.
Yes. What about you?
So my husband really likes scary movies, and I don't, even just like the music or like when it's silent and you hear like a creaking of a door, I can't handle it. But I will watch with him with my hands like over my eyes, and then I'll watch the reflection of the TV like in the window as if it's like less scary that way.
Oh, yes.
Same. Or like standing on the couch. Like I'm really bad person to watch scary movies with, I guess, is the takeaway there. So the scary movies that we're going to talk about today are obviously
not
from
scary.
Our childhood. So they're not that scary. And they're Disney Channel original movie, Halloween movies. So they're immediately just elite, like the best of the best. So we're just going to go revisit these movies together and talk about their lasting impact, because we're in our 30s and I still watch them every year. Delulu, but extra delightful and spooky. So Mary, you go first. Tell us, what did you pick?
You know, I had to pick the 1998 Disney Channel original movie, Halloween Town. This instant classic is directed by Dwayne Dunham, and he was the man behind a couple other Disney classics like Double Teamed from our Disney Channel original movie episode and Tiger Cruise with Hayden Panettiere.
Oh my God. Oh.
Classics. And Halloween Town stars the Debbie Reynolds, Kimberly Brown, Joey Zimmerman, and Judith Judith Hoag. We're going to go with Haig. It's better than Hoag. we're off to a start.
A start. Not a strong one, just a start.
We have started. So Halloween Town is Disney Channel's fourth DCOM, or Disney Channel original movie, to exist ever. That's pretty iconic. And it's actually the second one to start production. It just, by the time it came out, a few others beat it to the punch in being released. Do you know what the first DCOM to be produced was, Kels? Oh,
I feel like I knew this when I did our Disney Channel original movie. I don't know. I literally don't know.
Allegedly, because now I'm like, I can't believe it was Brink.
Brink? Wow, starting so strong.
And I feel like that can't be right, but that's what it said in the articles.
I think Disney Channel original movie started like a while ago, but the first Disney Channel original movie in that iteration, like it was called something else before. Disney Channel original movie started in the late 90s. So that sounds right to me.
Okay.
Like it's, well, under the DCOM banner, if you will.
Eric Van Detten was my Nick Carter proxy, and he was Brink, wasn't he?
We all wanted to be in that boat shed with him in Princess Diaries.
Oh my God. But yeah, Brink forever. But okay, we're talking about Halloween Town. So this incredible movie centers on Marnie, who on her 13th Halloween learns she's a witch and discovers a secret portal and is transported to Halloween Town, a magical place where ghosts and ghouls and witches and werewolves live apart from the human world. But of course, it's got to get a little crazy, and Marnie and company find themselves battling wicked warlocks, curses, surprise after surprise. This franchise went on to have 4 Halloween Town films and was a massive success for Disney all around. Kelsey, do you have any fond memories of this movie?
First of all, it scared the shit out of me when they're in this scary movie theater and everyone like gets like petrified or whatever, like looking at it, and you like hear the creepy music. I also had a crush on Calabar.
Oh my God. The mom's boyfriend?
Yes!
The mayor?
The mayor!
Oh.
I'm like, what can I say? I also like still remember the spell that they would say, Reiki Ma, Reiki Gafir. Clearly I've seen it recently, but that stuck with me, that little spell that they all cast. And something that stood out to me when I was younger, I remember, is when like the ghost goes in the sauna and turn it up all the way, and he like sweats out all this water weight and comes out really skinny. It was kind of like an unhealthy thing, I think, to show young girls, because like, what is that?
I know. Very good point.
But yeah, I loved it. And the horrible like special effects.
Oh my God, it was such a blast from
Marnie
the past.
On the giant pumpkin dropping in the baton.
The talisman. Whatever. Yes. Well, how Halloween Town came to exist is a cool story, and it all started with the Mr. Steve White. Steve White was the head of NBC's movie and miniseries department in the 1970s and 80s. But in 86, Mr. Steve left the company to establish his own production company, Steve White Entertainment. Now, The Wonderful World of Disney, which had been airing on NBC since 1988, was a very sought after TV spot, and ABC wanted that shit. And so NBC agreed to relinquish the rights of The Wonderful World of Disney to ABC on the condition that Walt Disney TV produced 6 movies for NBC in return. In 1991, a Miss Sherry Singer, who was a senior VP and a boss bitch of TV movies for Walt Disney Television, was assigned to collaborate with Steve on movies to fulfill the contract with NBC as part of this agreement. But you guessed it, you guys. This is also a love story.
It's a love story.
Oh, happy 1989 night.
Oh my God.
I totally forgot. I can't wait to hear Slut.
Slut?
That's one of the bonus tracks.
Oh my God. Wait. I totally miss that. I can't wait to hear Slut now either.
I know. Can you believe it? Okay. Sorry. So after working together, Steve and Sherry, they began dating. And in 1993, our Steve and Sherry got married. And again, they're trying to come up with the content. They have to come up with these movies for NBC. And while they were brainstorming, Steve shared a comment with Sherry that his daughter had said. He said, "I don't know where to go with this, but my daughter said to me, 'Dad, where do all the creatures from Halloween go the rest of the year when it's not October 31st? Like, okay, very valid question. And that's kind of how the concept of Halloween Town was born. And I love stories like that. And like, honestly, kids should come up with the plots for kids' movies because that's what's like going on in our mind. And that's what we want to see. And that's basically what happened here. And look at how good it turned out. So the concept, they called it Halloween Town and they pitched the concept to NBC as part of this 6-picture deal, and the network greenlit the project. And with this green light, our Steve and Sherry approached screenwriter Paul Birnbaum to write the script. And Paul took inspiration from his own life and used the names of his children, Marnie, Dylan, and Sophie, as the protagonists in this film. And initially, the first draft of Halloween Town was geared actually towards adults. It was supposed to be like an actual scary movie.
Wow.
And yes. And in 1994, the script was presented to NBC and they passed on the project. And let me just tell you, NBC made a huge mistake. Because in 1997, Sherry and Steve, still married, still crushing it, they established the Singer and White Entertainment Group and returned to the idea of Halloween Town. They just couldn't let it go. How could you let it go? And they pitched it to Disney Channel, who also had initially passed on the project. They changed their mind, however, after they had aired a Disney Channel original movie called Under Wraps that did very well.
Do you remember that movie, Mary?
Why does it sound familiar?
So it was about a mummy that like comes to life and this kid is like trying to hide it. And I remember it was always on. And I just remember that they had Celine Dion's All By Myself.
Oh, really?
And every time I heard that song as a kid, I associate it with the movie Under Wraps.
Oh my God. It sounds familiar, but I'm not as good with movies. So you're going to have to bear with me. So Under Wraps did well. And they're like, you know what? Maybe this would do well on Disney as well. So they went back to our Sherry and Steve and they were like, let's do this, but let's make it a little bit more Disney friendly, more for the kids. And so that is how we got our beloved Halloween Town. Never give up, never stop pushing for something you believe in. And who knows, you might fall in love at work. So in a 2018 interview with Insider, our director, Dwayne Dunham, revealed that the film was being originally presented to him as a $20 million to $30 million project. That's a big budget, especially for 98.
Yeah, what's that with inflation? Like 100?
That's crazy. Yeah, but the budget ended up only being $4 million. And then, of course, you got to get to our casting. So the casting for the film, we had the very first person cast was Miss Debbie Reynolds, who at the time had just decided to kind of pivot into TV work. There were a list of actors that were given to Sherry and Steve when the movie was in early stages. And Sherry said, when we saw that list and we took one look at her name and said, oh my God, would she really do it? We never want anyone else. Which, like, taste, I get it. It's Debbie Reynolds.
A huge get. I remember even right? My parents being like, is that Debbie Reynolds? Like, yes.
And until rewatching this movie in the last week, like, I never realized how perfectly cast she was for this role. She just has so much warmth. She's just like this perfect grandma figure. Like, I really just need a hug from her, to be honest. She was so wonderful and
encouraging of yes. Marnie.
And apparently once they started filming, when she got to set, Debbie introduced herself to everyone as Princess Leia's mom, which is like, A, so cute because she's clearly so proud of her daughter. And B, it was probably like super timely because Star Wars was like blowing up back then. Like Star Wars was it.
And like, she's so fucking famous.
I know.
It's like very cute for her to be like, my daughter is a bigger star than I am.
Just seems like a proud mom. So in 2016, we had Kimberly Brown do an interview and she recalled her audition process for the film. And she had to do the scene where her character reacted when she learned that she's actually a witch. Didn't specify which scene it was, but she actually had to go in and audition twice before being selected for the role. And in 2020 at a GalaxyCon, Judith Haig revealed that she had a meeting with the head of Disney Television where she read for her part. And Judith, who previously played April O'Neil in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, said, I kind of knew in the room that I had gotten the job because his son, the Disney executive that she met with, was a diehard Ninja Turtle fan. So sometimes these things just work out how they're supposed to. According to Sherry Singer, the hardest role to cast was of the antagonist in Kelsey's celebrity crush, Calabar. They wanted him to be scary, but like Disney Channel scary. So like not
so scary. Hot.
And so Robin Thomas, who had previously worked with Steve on Amityville Dollhouse, was brought into audition and was the final choice. And Kelsey's life was changed forever. I'm never going to let the crush on Calabar go.
He kind of looks like John Mayer. So like it makes sense. Tall, dark and handsome and kind of evil.
And a little bit evil on the side. So let's go through this story. Miss Gwen Piper refuses to let her kids, Marnie, Dylan, and Sophie, go out for Halloween. I remember watching this and being like, this is insane. They can't go trick-or-treating. Like,
I know.
Just such a blow.
Marnie was being so tame with it. Also, like, go to your friend's house that night and then go trick-or-treating with them. Like, she was a little too obedient for my taste.
See, I thought she was a little sassy.
Oh, were you not a door slammer growing up, Mary?
Oh, if my door would come off if I slammed it, I'm pretty sure.
I hate to admit it. I was a brat. I was a real brat.
No, but I thought she was given some lip service, but that might just be my perception. But their friends are going out without them. Dylan doesn't seem to really care. Marnie cares. Sophie's watching the trick-or-treaters. But then all of a sudden, like in the midst of the trick-or-treaters, basically we get this bus coming down from the sky. This like bus stop comes out of nowhere that no one seems to see. And Grandma Aggie, Gwen's mother, shows up for her annual Halloween visit with her magic never-ending carpet bag that has, like, the personality of a cute little dog. I love that type of thing. But Grandma Aggie's there. She's, like, pulling all these Halloween decorations out of her purse, trying to get the children more involved in Halloween. But Gwen is, like, rolling her eyes in the corner, like, Mother, no. So if you don't know now, let me spell it out for you. Aggie and Gwen are secretly witches, but Gwen is determined to live this normal life as a mortal instead, and that's what she wants for her children as well. So Aggie reads the children a bedtime story called Halloween Town, because Gwen's like, go to bed, it's time for bed, no fun on Halloween. But Halloween Town is this mystical place where witches, vampires, monsters, they live in peace away from us mere mortals. And little sister Sophie points out a drawing of a witch in the book that she's like, oh, Marnie, it's you. And Grandma Aggie does not respond. She kind of like nods and looks, and it's very unsubtle, subtle response.
And Marnie's like, it is me. And I always thought that the cartoon was a lot different looking than Marnie was.
I know. I was like, I guess it's just this brunette girl, but okay.
Also, though, can we acknowledge that it's weird that Marnie has the same bedtime as her like 6-year-old sister?
I know, like, everyone goes to bed at once.
Yeah, I thought that was weird.
But so Grandma Aggie has to leave and catch her midnight bus back to Halloween Town. But
not before she turns their fried chicken into a real chicken again, which is a little buck.
Yes. Buck, she's buck? Like, don't you know chicken's better fresh,
it
sort of
keeps
line?
It's better when they're fresh, yeah.
Yes. So she's heading out. She's trying to convince Gwen to let Marnie commence her witch's training. There has been some mysterious happenings in Halloween Town. She needs the support, and Gwen just has her foot down. Absolutely not. But of course, Marnie has snuck down the stairs and is hearing this whole conversation and is like, holy shit, so I'm a witch. And if she doesn't do her training now, she's going to lose her powers. But again, Gwen says no. Grandma Aggie leaves to return home. But Marnie decides to follow her. She decides this is her destiny. And Dylan follows with her because he's like, I'm the man of the house and I need to come with you. He's this like cute little boy that with big glasses. He's adorable. And they just make it onto this magical bus that takes them back to Halloween Town. They arrive to Halloween Town, and that's when they discover that little sister Sophie has snuck along too. And so the whole gang is there and they start looking for Aggie. And that's when they are approached by Calabar, who is the hot mayor of Halloween Town. And he actually gets them into a cab. He's like, I'm going to get you to your grandma's house. Don't worry. The cab's driven by Benny the Skeleton. Fun fact, Benny the Skeleton was actually played by a robot. Oh my God, high tech Halloween Town.
That's wild.
Yes. An actor dubbed the lines later, but like Halloween Town is clearly paving the way for technology to come. So Benny brings them to Grandma Aggie and she decides she's going to let them stay. She's not going to take them back home immediately. And I was like, totally appalled that she's like not mad at all that they snuck out and followed her like into a different world or dimension or wherever they are. She's like, oh, you're here. Like, I'd be like, oh my God, your mother's going to fucking kill me. Like, doesn't have a care of the world. And she's like, okay, we'll start your witches training. But she's looking into her cauldron and she's like, she has to take care of this bad thing first. She's seeing this like vision of a hooded figure, a dark, ominous figure in her cauldron. And it's doing that evil laugh. And to defeat this evil creature, she needs to activate Merlin's talisman with a spell and a potion to defeat it. That's what it requires. And she tries to like light the talisman with like an instant potion. And she's like, ah, oh, I should never use instant. It's like funny, cute little comedy.
Ina Garten would never.
I know. And so they have to go into town to get the ingredients for this potion. And that's when we meet Luke, a goblin who was made into a handsome human by this shadow creature in the cauldron. We just don't know that yet. And apparently he's supposed to be like a hottie, but I didn't see it because he like tries to flirt with Marnie and she's like, hell no. Because he was like,
I was gonna ask if you had a crush on him. Because
no, did you?
No, I was all about
Calabar.
The bad thing. Isn't that what Sophie called him? The bad thing.
Yeah, she was so cute. So then they're, you know, shopping and they wander into a shop selling witches' brooms and her and Aggie get one and they're able to fly into the sky together. And it was this cute, very low-tech scene. But fun fact, while the scene is less than a minute long, it took an entire day of filming, just hours to film. But it's a very cute family moment with them flying with the broom, you know, clearly like a fan blowing air into their face, but it's adorable. But this wonderful moment is shattered by the arrival of a very understandably angry Mama Gwen, coming to get her three children that have disappeared into Halloween Town. The kids are like, no, no, no. And she's like, we're going. But she can't get on the special bus. The magic bus is not around. And Marnie is really giving her mom lip service, in my opinion, right now. Being a little sassy, little frassy. She does not want to go back. And
Halloween is cool.
Oh, God. She is obsessed with Halloween, I will say. So the mom's like, I'm going to ask the mayor about the bus. And she doesn't know who the mayor is. And they go and see Calabar, and we then find out that this is Mama Gwen's ex-boyfriend. And
listen, Calabar.
Oh, yes. We get it right away. We are not calling him dad. Like, just bickering. Like, it's classic.
Such a thing in, like, Disney movies. Like, well, yeah, you can remarry after mom tragically died, but I'm not calling her mom. Like, yes. No one would ever do that.
No. Like, well, I'm not calling him dad. Yeah. But then they're talking to Calabar, but then they see Aggie walking somewhere with the ghoul, Luke, who's been turned into a hot boy, even though he's not. But he says that this hooded figure, this mysterious figure from the cauldron, wants to reveal himself to Aggie. And the family kind of gets the spidey senses that Grandma Aggie might be in trouble. So they follow them to this abandoned movie theater that Kelsey was talking about earlier. And then this is where Aggie finally meets this hooded demon. And that's when she sees all these missing Halloween Town citizens where they've been frozen in time. And so what I mentioned earlier, she was asking Gwen for help when they were back in the mortal world because her neighbors and her friends had like disappeared. And Gwen's like, Mom, they probably moved. I lose neighbors all the time. But it turns out Aggie was right. They've been frozen in time by this hooded demon figure in the movie theater. And the demon's like, give me the talisman. And Aggie's like, no. And you know what? Side note, when rewatching, I was reminded that this demon is creepy AF. Like, that def scared me as a kid.
so scary. He looks like dead and like soggy and scary and like wrinkly. Oh my God, like an evil toad. Kind of like, speaking of Star Wars, like Jabba the Hutt-esque.
Yes.
I don't know. He scared the shit out of me too. Also, I feel like this movie was foreshadowing the crumbling movie theaters around the country.
Oh my God.
Like,
right?
Even in Halloween Town, there's an abandoned movie theater.
Literally. But Gwen and the children, they followed their instinct and they arrived in the theater and saw what was going on. And in the chaos of it all, the demon freezes both Gwen and Aggie. And I thought that was like really scary to watch. It looked like they were kind of dying almost. Like, as a kid, I think I would have found that very scary. Like, and Gwen tries to stop it, but she like turns something into a flower. She's very clearly rusty with her witchcraft and wizardry. But the children escape and they go on the cute journey to obtain the necessary ingredients that they were trying to get with Grandma Aggie before to activate the talisman. They need the hair of a werewolf, the sweat of a ghost, and a vampire's fang. And so, like, they go to this dentist who's, like, extracting a vampire's fang, and they steal that. They get the sweat of the ghost when he's in the sauna. I just thought it was a cute sequence how they went off and got these elements of the talisman. But then they basically get kidnapped by Benny the Skeleton, almost kidnapped, who tries to freaking bully them into his cab with force. Like, this is the don't get into the car with strangers message. But I'm convinced that little sister Sophie is just a teeny tiny genius because she unleashes a dog who's just sitting there who takes care of their little skeleton, aka bone problem. Like, just so clever. But they've successfully dodged a formerly nice but now hostile Benny.
Never understood that part. Like, why did he turn mean all of a sudden? And I know that Grandma Aggie kind of like alluded to that. She's like, people are acting weird. They're not as nice anymore. I don't know. There's some plot holes, if you ask me.
Yes. I don't know, obviously. So then they have to do the spell. They have to recite the spell. And Grandma Aggie tried to do it earlier, and it didn't work because it was the instant potion. So the kids have to do it now. And Marnie cannot remember it. And again, our little genius Sophie is the one that is able to remember the spell. And then they realize that they have to actually put the talisman in this large jack-o'-lantern at the center of the town to defeat this hooded demon creature. When they arrive to complete this task, the demon appears and reveals himself to be Kelsey's crush, Caliber. Oh, the twists. And he's bitter that Gwen married a human, a mortal, instead of him. And he tries to persuade the townspeople to join him in taking over the mortal world. He's trying to rally the troops. And Luke, who turns out to be a good guy, the ghoul that was turned into a quote-unquote hot guy, he made a mistake. He was helping the demon, but he didn't realize what he was intending to do. He was hoodwinked.
At what cost, Luke?
Yes.
At what cost?
He's like, I'm trying to make up for it. I'm trying to write it, you know. So, okay, better late than never. Luke helps Marnie climb onto this jack-o'-lantern, and she tries to place the talisman inside, but Caliber places the spell on Marnie to freeze her. And so just as she's going to pass out into this, like, frozen person zone, Marnie drops the talisman inside the jack-o'-lantern, causing it to light up. This unfreezes her and everyone trapped inside the theater. It weakens Caliber. And Grandma Aggie, Gwen, everybody's fine. They all reunite. However, Caliber gets the talisman and says he will use it to become the ruler of the mortal and magical world. So this shit ain't over. And little brother Dylan is also revealed to have magical powers too. I think they believed it was just the girls, but he's part of the family with the powers as well. And they all defeat Caliber. Luke is no longer a quote-unquote hot guy. He has returned to his goblin appearance.
Quote-unquote hot guy, you savage.
He was not my cup of tea, but Marnie does give him a kiss. So, on the cheek. So, Aggie, to everyone's surprise, at least my surprise, decides to stay in the mortal world to spend more time with her grandchildren. And both Aggie and Gwen decide that it's time Marnie should be trained as a witch. And this obviously tees up the next three movies of the Disney franchise. So I did rewatch this week. I hadn't watched it for many years. And while cheesy at first glance, I completely understand why this movie is an instant classic from our youths. It had the perfect amount of like Halloween vibes without being too scary. And as an only child, I always loved and gravitated towards movies with sibling dynamics. You know, that was something that I didn't have in my life. And so I love that there's some back and forth and some funny quips and roasts of one another with the siblings. And I feel like back in the day, we all wished we had like powers like that. You know, we all wanted to be like magic. Harry Potter definitely inspired some of that as well.
I was always one birthday away from figuring out that I was a witch.
Yes, exactly. And so like that plot was totally relatable, totally would suck us in.
I freaking love it. I didn't really keep up with the second or third ones though.
No, or the fourth. But I learned that Kim Brown, aka Marnie, and David Koontz, who was the villain in the second Halloween Town, have apparently been like dating and together since 2017 and were actually engaged this past year. So like, look at Halloween Town bringing people together. Love is real. And just to wrap up my little summary, Complex Magazine ranked Halloween Town as number 9 on its 40 best Disney Channel original movies list. That might be a fun list to go through, Kaus. Yeah. And Katie Herney for BuzzFeed called the first 3 movies, so totally roasting the last movie, one of the best things about Halloween.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So I'm going to shut the hell up now. And I want to know what you have for me. Take me through it.
Okay. This might be niche for some people, but I can't understate that when I think of Disney Channel original movies, this movie comes to mind, even though it's definitely like a Halloween scary movie. My brain won't let it go. And I think about it often, and it's probably because it scared me so badly. So the movie I picked is called Don't Look Under the Bed. Did you see it, Mary, when it came out?
I didn't.
So this will be new for you. You're going to be like, what the hell is she talking about? So this movie came out in 1999. So fast follow to Halloween Town. And this was only the second Disney Channel original movie to get a PG rating because of the scary scenes. And it was the second and final horror genre film that Disney ever made. So Halloween Town, Under Wraps, and Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire. Remember that one?
Oh, yes.
Those were all spooky, but they were mostly comedy. They weren't a true horror movie. But Don't Look Under the Bed was directed by Kenneth Johnson, who's a huge fantasy horror guy. He did the Bionic Woman series, the Hulk TV series in the 70s. He also directed Xenon, though. So he's a hero on the pod for that one alone. But this man comes from the world of horror, and he was going to adapt it for this Disney audience. So I can't tell you enough how this movie scared the living shit out of me. And I think I fell asleep with the covers over my head for like probably more years than I should have.
See, I would go into my parents' bed, and that's why they were like, no more scary movies.
My dad would only let me in the bed for like 10 minutes and then he'd send me back. Like I wasn't allowed to stay there. So I might as well like just stay in my room. Like I'd feel so comforted and so safe. And then he'd be like, okay, you're a big girl now. Like you can do it. And I'd be like, no, I can't. But this scared the fucking shit out of me. And I wasn't the only one, because Disney execs tried really hard to strike a balance between scary and not too scary. But they thought like they nailed it with this one. Like, oh, yeah, it's definitely horror, but it'll be fine. Well, they immediately started getting inundated with angry letters from parents. And due to all the complaints, Disney ceased the annual rebroadcast of this movie. You know, they normally do like the Halloween countdown, like every day in October, they'll like,
yeah,
do like these Halloween movies. They had to pull it from the lineup starting in 2006 because they got so many angry parents being like, you traumatized my child. So that's 7 years, though, of making kids afraid of the dark. So that's like a pretty long run. I'm surprised, honestly, that it went on that long. So aside from being scary as fuck, this movie also covered some more mature themes like the fear of growing up, loss of innocence. There's also childhood illness in there. Ugh. These are all like very heavy topics for my 8-year-old brain to process, but it is still heralded as one of the best DCOMs of all time. I'm calling Disney Channel original movies DCOMs from now on. Get with it, everyone. Keep up. So in 2012, Complex ranked it 19th on their list of the 25 best DCOMs. In 2016, Collider ranked each DCOM, Don't Look Under the Bed, was number 20, and said it, quote, remains in the DCOM history books for one reason. It's scary as hell. I agree. And Entertainment Weekly even ranked it in their top 30. So clearly, this is in the top rankings for many people. I think it's because it's so unique and because it's so scary. It's not my favorite movie because of the movie. It's just some of that imagery and some of these really specific scenes just stuck with me for better or for worse. Yes. Aside from those enduring visuals, I forgot pretty much everything about this movie except how scary it was. So I rewatched it on a plane last week and I can retell you the entire plot just in time for you to be afraid to look under your bed this Halloween. You're so welcome. So let's get into it. Our story starts with a young Francis Bacon McCausland. Francis Bacon. I remember being so jealous that her middle name was Bacon because wouldn't want to be named after Bacon. So she lives in a town called Middleburg where weird ass things keep happening. Clocks are set ahead by hours. So everyone wakes up at 4 a.m. in this town thinking that it's 7 a.m. because that's what all their clocks say. They wake up and find that their dogs are on their roofs. There are dozens of eggs missing from Francis Bacon's family's fridge, and later that day, her biology teacher's car gets egged during school, seemingly with the missing dozen of eggs from her fridge. Uh-huh. Bees swarm the principal's office, and the school buses are mysteriously filled to the brim with water. There's this one scene where the school's pool turns into jello as a girl is diving into it, and you can only see her legs sticking out while it's like flubbering. It looked kind of fun, TBH, but now that I'm older, I'm like, oh my God, that girl's gonna asphyxiate in there. So Frances is a real nerd. She skipped a grade. Does that ever actually happen? Like, I feel like that was always like a thing in movies. Did you ever know anyone who skipped a grade?
I don't think so.
I know people got held back, but yes. I don't know anyone skipping a grade.
Right.
That sounds like one of those like movie tropes. Anyways, so she skipped a grade and she keeps talking about how she wants to rush through growing up and become an adult already. So this is going to be one of our themes of this movie. She's super precocious and she's trying to get to the bottom of all of these strange happenings. So the weirdest stuff is happening just specifically to Frances. This is the shit that scared me. So she's sitting in her biology class and you see in the background the skeleton, you know, that's in every science classroom.
Yes.
It slowly turns its head to look at her. And there's like a raven, like a crow model. Again, it's like a stuffed bird taxidermy thing that would be used for biology. And it also turns its head to look at her.
God.
The dolls in her room. What? Why does anyone have dolls? Haven't we learned that they're creepy? She has like these creepy ass dolls in her room and they all turn their head to watch her sleep at night. Her family home has like a bust in it and it turns to watch her. She's hearing these weird voices at night and she keeps seeing this guy that nobody else can see. He's following Francis around and as soon as she confronts him, he's so surprised that Francis can see him, he disappears into thin air.
So he's a ghost.
Well, you'd think that, Mary. So other weird things keep happening to her. Like Francis's best friend tells her that she has a crush on this guy. And then the next day, there are flowers planted on Francis's front lawn saying Joe Hart's Bert, like outing her friend's secret. And her friend is so pissed. And she's like, I told you not to tell anyone. And Francis is like, I didn't do this. And Joe is like, you're the only one who knows, Francis. So weird freaking things are happening. Also, remember the jello in the pool that I mentioned earlier? Well, Francis's dad said that they had a whole bunch of gelatin and now it's gone. So everyone's like, hey, Francis, where's the gelatin, Francis? But also, LOL, like a packet of gelatin we would use in like a recipe could turn a whole pool into jello. I remember thinking like, oh my God, that's going to be such a good prank when I'm in high school. When
like,
now. And then here's the kicker. Around town, the letter B is spray painted everywhere, included at school on everybody's individual lockers except Francis's locker. And when Francis opens her locker, there's a bee spray painted on the inside. So everybody at school thinks it's her doing all of these awful things because she's like this weirdo who skipped a grade. She shouldn't really be in high school yet. And maybe she's just like acting out because she's super immature. And everyone's like, is it bee for bacon? Again, there's some jealousy around the middle name. So Frances finally sees this guy again, who only she can see, and she confronts him, and she learns his name is Larry Houdini, and nobody else can see him because he's an imaginary friend.
Oh.
So a little different take than on a ghost. So Larry is played by Ty Hodges, who also played Larry Beale in Even Stevens. LOL. His characters are always named Larry. Ren got an F. Ren got an F. That Larry. So Larry tells Francis that he knows who's behind all of this funny business, and it's the boogeyman.
Oh, so no.
Does the spray painted B stand for bacon or B for boogeyman? Well, the school principal thinks it's the former. So Frances is in hot water. She's trying to prove that Larry Houdini exists, and everybody just thinks that she's crazy and having a mental breakdown because she's just not mature enough to be in high school. So she's trying to show the principal and the guidance counselor, like, look at this guy. He's right here. He's playing the drums in the music room. And they're like, honey, why don't you go lay down? We'll give you like a cold compress. Lay it over your eyes. So Francis is laying down. This is so scary. Francis is laying down outside the principal's office. It's the middle of the day. Like, it's daytime. You'd think that we'd be like safe, right? No. As soon as she covers her eyes and lays down on the bench outside of the principal's office, all of a sudden it gets really dark. Oh my God, I have goosebumps. I'm talking about it. It gets really dark. We start to see like purple smoke like coming out from underneath this bench that she's laying on. And then we see a creepy ass hand with creepy ass long nails stick out from under the bench. And it asks, can Franny come out to play? The way that this movie made me afraid to close my eyes cannot be overstated. So then there's like a very similar scene. Francis like wakes up in a jolt, blah, blah, blah. It all disappears. We think it's like maybe all in her head. Later that afternoon, Francis is in her room and then she leaves her room. And all of a sudden, these two scary ass hands jump out of her mirror as if to grab her when she's walking by. So when I watched this on the plane, I let out a scream. I screamed and I jumped. If I wasn't buckled in, my head would have hit that call button and a flight attendant would have come running. I would have jumped so high. I felt so bad for the guy sitting next to me. He definitely probably peed a little also because I forgot all these little jump scares.
What's the hand theme? It seems like a lot of like hands.
So clearly there's a creature that is trying to get Francis. So that's the thing, Mary. Like, I think what was so scary is like we don't know what it is. And like, yeah. I think your mind makes things always seem scarier than they are. But we know that there's creepy ass long nails and hands that are trying to grab Francis. And can Franny come out to play? Anyways, Francis is like, Larry Houdini, I need your help. Like, what the hell is going on? So Larry takes her to the library because that's a good lesson that Disney is trying to teach us. No problem you have cannot be solved by renting a book at the library. Support your local library. So he shows her Le Livre du Boogie, aka the Book of the Boogeyman. And it is there that Francis is convinced, okay, shit, like maybe this is real because the little kids at the library can see Larry, but none of the adults can. And she's like, I really need help. So Larry, please help me. So she finds out as she's building this camaraderie with Larry, she checks out the book from the library. She learns that Larry is actually her little brother Darwin's imaginary friend. So Larry is trying to be friends with Darwin still, but we learn that little Darwin can't see Larry.
Oh.
So we see Larry checking in on Darwin. He's like, Darwin, pull the covers over your head at night so the boogeyman can't get you. But then he's like sad and commiserating to Francis, like, hey, your little brother Darwin, like, he won't be my friend anymore. And Francis is like, well, it's childish to believe in imaginary friends. So that's why he doesn't believe in you. And Larry goes nuts. His eyes glow purple and bright green. And he starts breathing heavy. Your fault. He doesn't believe in me. Okay, so we know two things now. They're scary hands. And it's a bad thing that Darwin no longer believes in Larry. But somehow Frances can see Larry, her little brother's imaginary friend. There's a third thing that we learn that's so heavy. And it makes this movie get pretty serious pretty quick. So Darwin, Frances's little brother, has leukemia. And he's currently in remission. But it's clear that the family is still dealing with all the emotions of it all. It sounds like he almost died. So Frances and Darwin's older brother were asked to donate bone marrow to save Darwin's life. And Larry, who was Darwin's imaginary friend, you know, he's pissed at Frances for telling her little brother not to believe in him anymore. She's like, he needed to face reality to deal with his illness. And Larry's like, well, if you wanted him to be healthy so bad, why didn't you donate your bone marrow? And Frances is like, I wasn't a match. Like, I wasn't allowed to. And I was like, trying to imagine myself watching this as an 8-year-old, like, people fight about bone marrow to donate to a child with leukemia. Like,
oh my God.
I probably had no idea what that meant, but I was probably like, yeah, wow, Frances, you're a bitch for not getting bone marrow. Like, I was definitely probably on Larry's side. So this is heavy, right?
For a Disney movie?
Right.
Oh, my God.
So after this fight, Frances is in bed asleep, and suddenly the floor underneath her bed lights up purple and starts smoking just like it did outside the principal's office. The Disney fog machine budget must have been 6 figures because this fog fills up the room real quick, and we start hearing that creepy voice again and a really scary laugh. So Larry wakes up Frances and he goes, Frances, oh my God, the boogeyman is on your roof. And it's then that we see the boogeyman for the first time. And oh my God, it's really scary looking. This boogeyman has like fanged teeth. He's super pale, like dead looking skin, like soggy. Mm. Like he's been in like a bathtub for like 5 years. He has these weird like quills sticking out of his face. He has this really gross greasy hair and those disgusting really long nails. And he's also for some reason wearing like a Victorian style outfit. Like he looks like he's like from like, I don't know what historically accurate time, but like Marie Antoinette days.
I love it.
So I obviously looked into the boogeyman because this fucking scared me. I was like, how did they come up with this? So I read that he was originally made to be even scarier than what they ended up going with. They thought that they had toned it down so much to be, you know, kid friendly. So the director, Kenneth Johnson, said that in the early concept drawings that the boogeyman had quills sticking out of his skin everywhere and a serpent's tongue.
Oof, that would have did me in.
Right, but he was like, that's too scary. Like, let's make him more Victorian, and he'll talk in limerick-like speech. So everything the boogeyman said kind of rhymed, which, like, makes it a little bit lighter. But I thought it was creepier. I don't know. Something about it was like, this creepy man was designed to trick little kids. Anyways, back to the plot. So the boogeyman lights up Frances's house with Christmas lights. And I'm like, why is he putting up Christmas lights in the beginning of the school year? It's like September. We can leave the Christmas lights up till September. Well, it's because the rest of the town is suffering a blackout and nobody has power except Frances's house. So again, Frances is being framed by the boogeyman to make it look like she is doing something to the rest of the town.
Justice for Frances.
Justice for Frances Bacon. So Frances and Larry, the imaginary friend, are trying to find ways to defeat the boogeyman. And Frances starts noticing that Larry's fingernails are growing scarily long and they're growing super fast. And Larry looks scared out of his mind. So Larry really throws himself into trying to defeat the boogeyman. And his chosen method of doing so is making boogie goo. It's like catnip for the boogeyman. So while Frances's guidance counselor is over her family's house for dinner because she's trying to figure out why Frances is like off her rocker and her parents are trying to appease the counselor, like, we're a normal family, like everything's fine. One of the most enduring scenes in my mind comes from sort of like the hijinks that ensue during this dinner. Obviously, there's a teacher over, everyone's trying to be on their best behavior, but there's Larry, the imaginary friend, making boogie goo, like this giant pot of disgusting shit in the kitchen, and he's like fucking up the dad's cooking. So the guidance counselor, there's this one scene that's actually so fucking disgusting. She's eating a pudding that Frances's dad made. Also, side note, I love that they flip the gender roles in this movie because Frances's dad does all the cooking and cleaning, and I think that's really important for kids to see. Rant over. So the dad made this amazing pudding, the guidance counselor is eating it, but it was tampered with Larry with Frances's brother's gym socks. So the counselor is eating this pudding and she pulls out a piece of gym sock from her mouth. It's just one of those things that I think about when I'm eating pudding sometimes. Not that I eat pudding often, but when I do,
right,
I'm thinking about this fucking movie from 20 years ago. Oh, God. Okay. So Larry's making the boogie goo. He keeps eating it and he's like, wow, this tastes so good. And Frances is like, Larry, what's going on?
Oh, no.
Burst your nails and now you're eating
boogie goo.
That's literally all Frances said. And Larry immediately goes, I am not turning into a boogeyman. And it's like, okay, thou doth protest too much, Larry. So then we see Frances reading the boogie book later that night, that when a child stops believing in their imaginary friend too soon, they turn into a boogeyman. So what's happening to Larry. Frances made her little brother Darwin stop believing in Larry. So now he's turning into a boogeyman. So now Frances really wants to help him. And Larry's teeth are also getting boogified. And he just looks really scary. Like, I cannot tell you how scary it is. But the plot thickens. So they're making this boogie goo. Frances is connecting the dots because she's a genius who skipped a grade. Meanwhile, little Darwin has unknowingly stepped into boogie goo and goes into Frances's room, aka where the boogeyman lay. So the boogeyman grabs Darwin from under the bed. You just see his little feet dangling over the bed and those scary ass hands with the long nails come out and grab him. That is terrifying. As someone with a little brother who I do not want to be abducted by the boogeyman, I was like watching my brother sleep at night to make sure no one would take him.
That's so cute.
So he drags Darwin into boogie world.
Oh my God.
It sounds crazy when I'm saying it, but I can't tell. Like, it was so scary.
I believe it.
Frances and Larry go down under to retrieve Darwin from Boogie World. And Boogie World is basically like a life-size version of everything that's left under your bed. There's like a moldy peanut butter sandwich, a toy car. There's missing puzzle pieces, loose playing cards. Basically, it's like when I was watching it, I was like, this is like the budget version of the Upside Down from Stranger Things.
Oh my God.
The Upside Down was just like under someone's bed. Like, it very much gave Upside Down. Like, did the Duffer Brothers see this movie? Like, I feel like there should be like a retroactive credit. Perhaps to don't look under the bed. So anyways, we learn that the boogeyman is also a genius and probably also should have skipped a grade in boogie high school because they were just using Darwin to bait Frances into boogie world because they're really after Franny. So they get down there and Larry fully turns into a boogeyman. So it's two boogies against Frances and her little brother Darwin, who's being held captive in a stinky sock that was allegedly found under the bed. So you have to imagine all these like oversized giant things. It's like when they went under the bed, they were like, honey, I shrunk the kid size, like teeny version. So everything's like really big down there. So Darwin's in an oversized stinky sock. Frances is trying to reason with two boogeymen now. And Frances reminds her little brother, like the boogeyman is real. And his imaginary friend, Larry, is real. And she's like, if you believe in Larry, clap your hands. And little Darwin starts clapping his hand. He's like, I still believe in Larry. So Larry, now that Darwin believes in him again, he busts out of his boogie exterior and he helps Frances fight the boogeyman. So they fight for a while, blah, blah, blah. Just when it looks like the boogeyman is going to kill Larry with his giant nail that turns into a sword, Frances remembers that the boogeyman is just her imaginary friend that she stopped believing in when she was too young. Zoe. So slowly, we see Franny go, Zoe, it's me. So slowly, we see this scary old Victorian man turn into a young blonde girl named Zoe. Because Frances remembered her and believes in her again. So all of a sudden, Frances and Zoe and Darwin and Larry, everyone is fine and happy and giggly with their imaginary friend. And Zoe, important lesson again, Disney ahead of its time. Zoe reminds us that boogeyman is not an inclusive term and we can use boogie person instead. So we love that life lesson. So Frances remembers that she stopped believing in Zoe when her little brother Darwin got sick with leukemia and she tried to grow up too soon. So we're coming full circle. We're learning that it's important to maintain your innocence when you can. Frances tells her dad that strange things have started happening in the town next door. So everybody realizes that it wasn't Frances behind all the weird stuff after all. So not only is Darwin alive and well, Frances has her imaginary friend Zoe back and she's off the hook for all the things that people thought she did. So then how do we wrap this up? This amazing Iliad of ups and downs. Well, Larry and Zoe are like, Frances, you're actually too old to have an imaginary friend, so you'll never see us again.
Oh, and just like that?
Isn't that? awful. And then Larry, invisible Larry, kisses Francis.
What?
They kiss on the lips.
Oh my God, you're kidding. So
I read something interesting about this. Entertainment Weekly was talking to Kenneth Johnson, the director, and Kenneth said that Disney had a problem with this kiss because Larry's character is black. Like, what the fuck? He said Disney was concerned about having a black boy kiss a white girl. They asked me to do it a couple of different ways, including not really at all. I fought for it, end quote. What the fuck? Obviously, he won the argument because it made it in the movie, but I'm so disappointed that was even a question at all, like from the same network that gave us The Color of Friendship. Like, what the fuck?
That is so weird.
But anyways, so yeah, Larry's like, actually, Francis, you're too fucking old for this shit. Like, actually, maybe you should grow up. I'm going to kiss you. And then they disappear forever. And Francis never sees them again.
Wow.
I know. So then the movie ends and you're like, wow, okay, how do we wrap this up? Well, Frances is in her bed later that night and Frances's little brother Darwin comes in her room. He's like, I'm scared. And Frances is like, don't be scared of the boogeyman. You're fine. And he's like, no, I'm scared of getting sick again.
Oh.
And like, what? And Frances says, basically her advice to her little brother, who's like seven, says, you know, adults just pretend not to be scared until they aren't scared anymore. So I guess that's the lesson here. Fake it till you make it, everyone.
What an interesting plot and like very creative, albeit dark and a little mature for probably the demographic. I think it's a very creative plot.
It is a wild ride watching it back, but it's still freaking scary. Like, I'm not surprised that so many parents were like pissed that it was like airing at like 7 p.m. at night. Also, right. Something that I didn't pick up on as a kid, the ending credits are Boogie Wonderland by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh.
Boogie Wonderland, which I just love.
Wow. Well, that was a really illuminating run through, Kels. I appreciate that.
It's on Disney Plus, if I didn't dissuade you from watching.
I am home alone this weekend, and I will watching it.
I was staying in a hotel this week, and I noticed that there were, like, cubbies under the bed, not just, like, drawers. And I had to, like, take a deep breath before I was flashed my flashlight under.
You did a sweep?
I always do a sweep. I do the whole like bed bug check, make sure no one's hiding in the room check. I'm on like flight attendant TikTok where they have all these great tips for solo women travelers.
Do you do the mirror thing? Look at the mirrors or whatever.
Wait, what's that?
To make sure that, I mean, probably
that
where you're
not
staying.
A double mirror?
Yes, yes. I forget the tip, but there is a tip to check the mirror, but I don't remember what it is.
Motherfuck. Next time
we will figure out the mirror trick. Or if somebody knows, please tell us.
Or better yet, leave us a review and forget the mirror tip after all and just tell us how much you love our podcast.
We will read it out loud in one of our next episodes.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We appreciate you so much, and happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween! Bye!
Bye.